Slick Nerd Pro. What up, John G? Appreciate you for having us in the building. Never know who gon' slide through for the part. It's Slick Nerd Pro and John G the God. Best from the future and the past and the broad. From the underground kings to the full-blown stars. Heard they won the 16 but got the short bars. Matchbox racing all these small sports cars. Best hangout in the city, you should come and see. John G's podcast got a posse.
I ain't tripping off no amateurs, they never got the stamina. Talk some real shit with the podcast cannibal. John got a posse, tell me who gon' stop me. My bitch big bodied, I call her Maserati. Woo. Stay tuned for them topics, informed on that hot shit. You here for them real vibes, fuck the gossip. Haters play possum, we fucking up their posse. Yeah. Crashing in their party, you rocking with the posse.
I do appreciate you guys being here. It's good timing. My neighbor just left, that lives above me. They're very loud. They're a stomper. And so it's one of those, like, everything about moving here has been awesome except for this situation where it's just, like, sort of ritualistically in the morning and in the evening, this, like, just being able to sort of track your neighbor's movements isn't always the most ideal thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. You could be, like, a Splinter Cell or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it sounds like he's wearing combat boots, you know? So that's the problem. I don't really know his deal. But
is he ever actually wearing combat boots?
What's that?
I'm wearing combat.
You're wearing them right now? Oh, fair.
Does he stomp when you podcast too loud?
No, that is hilarious, though. I've sort of given into the, like, with the podcasting thing. Like, I don't necessarily try and create, like, this anechoic chamber for, like, pristine audio quality. It sort of feels better to be, like, on the scene a little bit and be you know, whatever happens, happens, you know? So if he did come home and cause a scene, it's almost better.
Johnny on the spot. On the spot.
It gives us more things to say. Oh, cool. We can talk about that for 35 seconds or something like that. So,
oh, we've got two Johnnies on the spot.
Yeah.
Actually,
I am John. I've always been told that I have a face for radio. So,
really? Well, this that's a horrible thing for someone to say.
Yeah, hold on.
It's like, man. Did you bring a soundboard?
Damn.
Yeah.
You're very prepared.
That's all I got.
I do a lot of things in post-production, but yeah, nothing live on the spot. You know, I'm not
Oh, I need to make my air horn, actually.
Oh, wait. I got you.
No. There's my version of it.
I'm glad that you both came so prepared. I was terrified. You know, I was like, how am I going to do this?
We did this really uncomfortable gig once at Auto Bar.
Okay.
It was like this comedy night or something. I couldn't quite understand what it was, and their intention was to have us play, like, walk-on music for the guests.
Okay. Which project is this?
This was Jazz Lunch. This was back in the day.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you haven't done the walk-on music, you don't really appreciate how short of a time it was. So we would be, like, counting off, and it would already be, like, too late. You know?
Oh, right, right. So you're, like, getting into the groove, and then it's like, no, please stop playing.
Yeah, but the best part, honestly, is they had a guy, like, sitting upstairs on the little couches, you know? And he just had a soundboard, and he was funny as hell. Like, they would say, so there was, like, two hosts, and he was just doing soundboard stuff.
Oh, that's great.
I want to be that guy.
Oh, yeah. They made the mistake of interviewing the band.
Yeah.
And the band made the mistake of trying to be funny. And
Ryan was actually funny to his credit. But
who would try and interview a band? That's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, hold on.
Oh, that's customized. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You could sell that sound pack somewhere.
It's just one sound.
Yeah. Pew, pew. Yeah, but you put that in the NNXT and you're good to go, you know? So.
Hell yeah.
So, John, I'm glad you're here. I remember mentioning this to you a while ago.
This podcast?
No, not the podcast. Okay. Although I should have mentioned the podcast prior to your arrival because I only mentioned it to Dan and they were kind enough to relay the information. So that was a good thing. But no, years ago, it's one of my favorite Joe Squared memories, but do you both remember the Stranger Things show?
Oh, yeah. I was actually thinking about that on my way here.
Oh, really?
We all went through something.
Yeah. So I don't remember which project it was. I don't know if it was $100 Girlfriend or Adjective Animal or whatever, but I remember the show because I somehow either I got messaged or Joe got messaged messaged, and this band from Chicago wanted to get added to a show that was already booked. Or no, they wanted to book a show. You had booked something already.
Right.
Yeah. And their sell was that they had the dude from Stranger Things.
Right.
One of the dudes from Stranger Things.
Post Animal?
Yeah. They were called Post Animal.
Yeah, I remember Hex Girlfriends was playing.
Yes. Yeah. That's also like a really cool part of the story. So I don't know, all day. So I remember you had a Megadeth t-shirt on. So after your set,
sick.
Yeah, I played Sweating Bullets, you know, the all-time classic song by them. And like, this is not unusual of me to do, is to like either find something like someone's wearing or someone said something and you throw it onto the playlist.
Yeah, I like that about you.
Yeah, it's like, it's fun. I think Donnie gets that a lot too. I've seen him throw on some nice curveballs like post-show or even mid-show.
Yeah, he goes a little wild, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember playing Megadeth, and then it was Father's Day, so I played Everclear at one point, right? Yeah.
Father of mine.
Yeah, of course, yeah. No, their other Father's Day song.
That's Pale Green Stars, right?
Yeah. But then I think there's another band. I don't know. I think I was having a smarmy day. So like this band got on, I helped set them up. They were a five piece. Yeah. Oh yeah, the nugget of information that's important here is the guy from Stranger Things was not with them.
There,
yeah. Right. He
and meanwhile, like 70 people showed up and they were like, everyone was like, where's the guy from Stranger Things?
And this was also like, I think only the first season had come out. So this is like, it was brand new.
Yeah.
It was like the thing on Netflix. And they booked the tour saying that this was this guy's band and then they show up without him. So that was pretty cool.
My understanding was that they had done South by Southwest.
Okay.
I think, or something. They had done
probably
a tour with the dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the rest of the band was like, we love being rock stars. Like, we want to stay out on the road. Right. And he had to go back to work.
Yeah.
So they're like, fuck it. We'll just work. Book shows last minute and we'll say this and get on. So they like did all these last minute.
It's like, guys, I'm sorry. I'm not coming back from LA. Yeah. I'm out of here now.
Making money.
Yeah. So then, yeah, they played their set and they weren't the nicest dudes. Like, they commented on the reverb that I gave them. I guess it was too wet. They're like, this guy with the reverb, am I right?
They said that on the mic?
They said it on stage, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that, but I just remember them being snarky.
Yeah.
So at the end of their set, I pulled up the Stranger Things theme song.
Yeah.
And the drummer from the stage went, really, dude?
Yeah.
So fucking funny, bro.
And then didn't one of them like beeline over to the soundboard and try to make
it? It was
stop?
The same guy. Yeah. It was like later on. He was like, dude, I thought that was really fucking cool how you like played the Stranger Things theme song after our set. It was really fucking cool of you. He's like, why would you do that? And I was just like,
you don't know?
Yeah. I was like, dude, I don't know. I played Megadeth. I played Everclear. Like, this is your time. And and then Hex Girlfriends was going to go last, and they ran up to me, and they're like, did that guy yell at you for playing the Stranger Things theme song? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, that's so funny, because we were going to play the Stranger Things theme song.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, well, I saved you, I guess. It probably would have gone over a little bit better if they
No, that was a legendary, like the setup, the punchline. It was like this uncomfortable set where everyone was just like looking around. It's like, when's the guy going to show? He's not going to show up. Yeah. And there's nowhere for him to hide somewhere, you know?
So they had, it was a five piece without him, and they had three guitars. So I don't know if they replaced him or they're a six piece with four guitars.
It's unclear. Yeah.
Which would be insane.
I also remember showing up and one of them, like, they had like a little neck rest and they were like teching one of their guitars.
Okay.
Like during, I was like, you are, what? That's,
okay.
You need to set your guitar up after like a couple weeks.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rough. It's rough out there.
It is rough.
With Steve.
Joe Squared.
That's one of my fondest Steve? Joe 2 memories, you know?
His character's name is Steve, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I never watched the show. Really.
Yeah, I haven't seen the
show. I watched the season finale of the first season.
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, oh, okay, cool, I get it.
What happens? Can we spoil it for your listeners?
Sure. I mean, I think there's like a shadow world.
Isn't it like years old now?
There's some alternate dimension of darkness that the kids stumble upon. I'm pretty sure that's sort of the bulk of it. And then
Steve is beloved because he is an arc. He starts out as a bully and becomes a zero for a second and then becomes a hero, basically. It's like the you graduate high school as a popular kid and then you're nothing. Mm-hmm. And then
and you're nothing.
Yeah.
It just ends.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I was wondering if you were going to bring that night up, and then it's like the first thing you brought up.
I was sort of like, I need to get this out of the way. And yeah. I brought it up to John at a show like a while ago, and you're like, oh, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've ever talked about it. Yeah. I think this is a perfect opportunity.
You know what's funny about it too is like they could have booked the show easily without using that guy's name.
Sure, they were a fine band, you know?
Or they could have just been like, hey, we were touring with him. He had to go back to work, but we'd like to be on the show. And we'd be like, cool.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's so simple.
It's no problem.
Yeah, they come through the back and you're just like, that's not him. That's not him. Yeah. It's like, wait a minute.
And for me, like,
there's a lot of these guys.
Really, even know what he looked like. So I was
What's
going on?
Well, because I think in the show, he's not even part of the gang. He's like the older brother of one of them. So, I mean, that's my understanding of this situation. But
yeah,
who knows?
It's kind of apt for the band, too. He's not really part of the gang. Really, the older brother.
He's just, famed out.
Oh, man.
He's on to other things.
Accurate.
Stranger Things. Oh, man. So, you know, that's something we share.
Yeah. Well, sure. See ya.
Yeah, that was real. Cool. No, the part, like, so it's funny. I started the podcast without really, a lot of people do them as promotional material, but I just do it because it's fun audio project to work on, you know?
Cool.
And it also is like an excuse as someone who's done shows for so many bands over the years. I like meet all these people and you can chat, but you never like talk to them for like super long.
Right.
So this sort of is like my excuse to reach out to people and kind of be like, what's your deal? Yeah. Where'd you come from?
Yeah, like, you're always talking over something too, usually. Yeah. So it's, or someone's busy or.
Right. Yeah. There's like a hard cutoff. You know, you can't talk for like more than 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Something has to happen.
Or I'm always like, in the context of running shows, like always looking at the stage and like, I always get anxious too. Like, often I'll be at the front of the stage well before I'm needed. I'm like the anti sound guy in that way. Most sound guys disappear for as long as possible. But those times where I'm just like, like waiting there for them to like plug their pedal board in and like, all right, cool. Now are you ready? So I think I'm putting too much pressure on some of these bands, but
it's good for them.
Bands need pressure.
Yeah. Some bands for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
I think all bands need pressure.
I love when the band, like there'll be a band mid set and they'll be like, we're thinking we're going to wait like another 15 or 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That needs to go.
Yeah. It's like, no, like, because you're going to lose the people that are here now.
Yeah.
So
bands need pressure. Bands need structure. High standards and structure. And I think something that always kind of surprised me was like when people talk about how tiring it is to play a show or whatnot. And to me, it's like most bands stand there and just kind of play guitar
for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, what cardio are you getting out of this?
Yeah, maybe the drummer is like broke a sweat.
You did like 10 minutes max of manual labor getting your gear in there. And like, yeah, I mean, don't say that to me because like there's construction guys outside.
Right.
Like that have been doing that equivalent like for 8 hours today.
Right.
So I don't know. It's tiring if you do stuff on stage, but
for sure.
But maybe it's mentally taxing. I don't know.
The emotional labor of playing a show.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's like 30, 45 minutes, you know? That's how long you're working. You're not even putting in a full hour.
You can't even get minimum wage.
Yeah.
It's like half a workout.
Yeah.
And you're not working out.
I don't know. I mean,
you walked on the treadmill.
To be fair, like when I perform, I sweat profusely for some reason.
Yeah.
Whatever psychological thing is happening for me, I like.
Well, you've definitely got lights hitting you. It's like it's like hot yoga, but really mild heat, and you're not doing yoga.
Yeah.
What else is like that?
Being on the beach, sauna, very similar to hot yoga, that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. Being in a sauna is just like being in a band.
A tanning, getting a tan, a fake tan, you know?
Yeah. Takes a lot of mental focus.
Like, heat lamps. Those are like
heat
not,
lamps.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed that the heat light bulbs aren't in style anymore.
Oh yeah. Okay. You know? So like lizards go through something very similar to what a band goes through.
Lizards.
Stage.
Yeah. I mean, I had them at home.
A metamorphosis of
lizards?
Types.
No, heat lamps. No lizards. I'm sorry.
You had heat lamps at home?
Yeah, they were in the bathroom. So you would like, it would be cold outside and you would like take a shower and then you would like flip on the heat light and it would be like nice and hot.
And suddenly you're in a band,
Yeah, it was great. So anyway, that's kind of like playing a show.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, give me an hour.
This is great, yeah.
Give me a full hour and you're like moving around a little bit or you're like singing really hard to sing stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or everything's really fast. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk about like how hard it was today, you know? I think I've made my point.
Yeah. Well, your band is a little different. I mean, you're doing like some quad workouts and things like that, you know, some lunges. Some stretching.
It is
kind of like yoga.
We like pushed it a little too far though once. Like we changed the order of the set and we had like some choreography where there was like a lot of jumping at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, a lot of times we'll open with our song Sanctuary.
Uh-huh.
And this time we were like, we'll close with it. And we did all this jumping and then we like went into this like 5-part harmony. Yeah. It was like, you know, it's very difficult. But it only lasted 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the jumping's tricky because it always reminded me of the Fat Lip video from Sum 41.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was always like, should we be doing this? And then we stopped and more Fat Lip.
I've been trying to put my finger on that when it comes to right, Super City. Yeah. I'm like, there's something about them.
Yeah. Sum 40 influences Sum 41.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now it's starting to make some sense, actually. So.
Oh, man. In Too Deep is a great song. That's an amazing song, actually.
See, they probably do have great songs. Unfortunately, it's just eclipsed by their massive hit, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you.
That's a pretty big hit,
another song.
It's got a cool video, too. The guy comes out of the pool playing a guitar solo. Nice reverse shot, actually. They, like, sunk him in. But
oh, nice.
The video, he comes out. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And he actually played the guitar solo backwards for the shot.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
That'd be
cool.
He practiced more for that shot than he did the regular guitar.
It's one of the first solos I tried to learn, actually. And my teacher was really bad and would just be like, no, learn out of the book. And I was like, all right.
Whoa. What was the book?
His own like little custom book. Yeah, it was some trash.
You can't do that.
Note reading. I had a teacher like that.
Yeah, and it was like I was already playing stuff on my own.
Right.
Right. And he had no idea. Like he wasn't interested in anything.
Did you read any music at that time?
Yeah, but on trumpet, not on guitar.
Gotcha.
So it was like a bit of a curveball.
Yeah, you have to transpose it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the trumpet only has 3 frets.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like the Guitar Hero controller.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's all aperture that gets
it is kind of similar dynamics. If you think about it. Yeah. It's like, because it covers all these different notes. Yeah. It's kind of like guitar.
Yeah.
It's like, how does this work? It doesn't make any sense, you know?
Someone said that about the saxophone to me once. It's like, it's easy, man. One button per note or something like that.
That's true.
Yeah, it is true.
Yeah, so.
That's why
it's all just a straight line.
Yeah.
It's like less and more.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
It just goes in order?
Yep.
Wow, that's so boring.
I know. They think they're so cool.
I know. They're really
so boring.
Yeah, it's incredibly boring.
Linear horn?
Yeah. Trumpet is like so random. It's like, how do they even design that, you know?
Yeah. I feel like we skipped over a lot of my questions, but we'll get to them. So that was one of my questions. You played other instruments besides guitar, like growing up. So trumpet, was that before guitar?
Yeah. Yeah, I started in 4th grade.
Okay.
Everyone had to pick an instrument.
Yeah. I played trumpet in 4th grade too.
Really?
Yeah, 4th and 5th grade.
Were you first chair?
Hell no.
Didn't think so.
There weren't any chairs.
Yeah.
Were you first chair?
I think.
Yeah.
I
bet you were.
I mean, I don't think they had it in 4th grade. But
right.
I think they were just trying to be nice. But yeah, like it was first chair.
There was one trumpet player. They're like, you're first chair.
Yeah. No, it was like me and Jimmy Kidwell were the two top dogs of the trumpet in high school.
Yeah.
Like Davis and that other famous one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Davis.
This classic trumpet duo.
Davis.
They called us the Dizzy Gillespie and Arturo Sandoval of my school.
Well, imagine like a bunch of third graders listening to Arturo Sandoval.
Yeah. I mean, my dad helped me. Yeah, I definitely heard it growing up or something similar. You know?
Yeah.
Were you in band?
I was in band, yeah. I played trumpet, like I said.
Okay, yeah. Nice.
It was a confusing time because the first instrument I remember taking lessons on was violin.
Okay, yeah, same.
Yeah, and then I was getting bored with violin when I turned like 8.
You're just killing it. You're just like,
I don't know. It was, you know, no, actually, you know what happened?
A little pedestrian.
It was like one of those, it was like one of those Suzuki schools. So they had just like a violin pack, you know, and you would all play like,
yeah, you learn like the different rhythms. Variation of, C of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
And you play, all at the same time, like a bunch of psychos.
Green sleeves.
So I did that from like age 4 to 8, and then I heard a recording of myself. My teacher was like, here's a tape recorder, like, here's what you sound like. And I was like, oh god, it's like, it's that squeaky, like, I don't want to play violin anymore. So she also played guitar. She was cool. She played guitar and violin and sang in like English and French and Spanish.
Okay.
And her husband played guitar and accordion and maybe something else.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a little band together. They would do like old school Zydeco music and digging up old stuff.
That's fun.
Yeah, but so she taught me guitar for like a couple years, but I couldn't really get around it.
Like acoustic?
Yeah, acoustic.
Like Blackbird and stuff?
Acoustic guitar, and I don't know. Yeah. It's like it hurt my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real insistence with like starting on acoustic guitar where I think it's the opposite thing should happen.
Right. It's hard to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when you're young, you know? Yeah. So then I studied piano. I started taking lessons because she was like, you're going to have to learn piano at some point. But in the meantime, I was like, picked up trumpet for a second.
Yeah.
There was like a cool music camp nearby growing up. So I would like go try out an instrument for a week. I played clarinet for a second. I played bass in like a little orchestra.
Like upright?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
But like classical. So like one time someone showed me like how to like play a blues and I was like, this is cool. I think I could have like, if I kept doing that, I would have been interested in it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but then I stuck with, you know, took lessons on piano through all that.
Sure.
Played snare drum and took drum lessons in middle school.
Nice.
And got back to the guitar much later.
He's got a degree in the guitar.
Jesus.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
From where?
Towson, actually.
Oh, cool. Nice.
It was really fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What stood out as far as like a guitar major? I guess it's like there's like ensembles or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Or like you have to write stuff, obviously, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, it's not required, but I'd like writing music. I would bring some stuff in.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they would ask us to write stuff and some people would do it and some people wouldn't.
Did you have to write papers?
Yeah, I wrote a long paper. I wrote a couple long papers.
It was a lot of jazzy stuff?
It was kind of whatever you wanted. I mean, their graduate program is like not jazz or classical specific.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of whatever you make it. So I was trying to take as many ensembles as I could. And I just tried to take as many classes as I could because it was fun. Yeah, I wrote a paper about ear training. It was
cool. Cool. Nice.
Got back into all that stuff.
Yeah. Did either of you have like perfect pitch or anything?
No.
Yeah.
Nah.
But I would say Dan has some of the craziest ears I've ever encountered.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. What's something that makes you think that, like a moment or something that you're like, holy crap?
I mean, just regularly, like, if anyone plays something, Dan seems to already know what it is.
Okay.
And that's what it takes, you know.
Sure.
I mean, that's the goal of ear training.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're both people that have kind of like a naturally strong ear. And it's interesting because with music, sometimes you try to like work on the things you're not good at. But if you lean into the things you are good at, you can go really far, you know. So ear training is kind of fun for me like that because I always, you know, like the Suzuki thing I learned by ear. So
it's
always kind of ingrained. So like
trying
to sharpen that knife even more is like really satisfying. More people should do ear training. It's really great.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of the most essential thing. It's because it's understanding what is happening. You know,
also like, when are you playing or listening to music or doing anything with music and you're not using your ears, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
It's like trying to paint without looking at it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And why would you be a human when you could be a god?
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean.
Just that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
That's how I feel on the matter.
Well, it's sort of like you want to do a thing and then you only want to learn about like part of the thing. You kind of want to like dive in and really figure it out and be like,
oh, and the returns are endless too. You can't
you
don't stop getting good. There's no bottom to the pit.
That's a good point. I have a drummer friend named Georgie Ginsburg, and that was one of the things she pointed out. She was like, don't stop like getting better at listening, because like there's like a limit to how fast you can play physically, or you know, how many notes you can play at once, but there's no limit to your ability to hear, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm paraphrasing. I'm sure people have quoted where it's like, yeah, like it doesn't matter what it looks like or all that. It's like, what does it sound like is kind of what it comes down to. So that's why I play, you know, I'm in a doom metal band, so there's lots of sustained power chords. But to me, like, that's what that needs, you know? It's like filling that space with a bunch of notes isn't going to necessarily get that feeling that, like, you're going for in that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no one cares. Yeah. Like, I mean, people care.
Sure.
Yeah, but, like, if we're going to, if 1,000 years go by and all that's left of us are our recordings, no one's going to care about like how hard you practiced and like how hard the thing you were doing was, unless it, I mean, unless it's truly amazing. And like the things you show aliens, right, are like you show them like a Jackie Chan fight scene.
Yeah.
Right. And part of that is like, oh, that's so technically hard, but it's also just beautiful. I think that's part of why the thing that people don't really take into account with stuff like that, with really technical things, it's like if it doesn't have the beautiful element to it, then it's kind of useless.
It kind of becomes like music sports almost.
Yeah if it doesn't have this thing that's tapping into the things we kind of we all relate to from the beginning of humanity essentially, then it's not going to be remembered that well. It'll be remembered like maybe in the moment it's like, wow, that was cool. But it should always be seeking something a little more, whether it's really, really simple or really complicated. I think they're just means to the same end, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's like a lot to, I'm like, ooh. So I guess with practicing, like, so how do you compartmentalize all the different things that you need to do, right? So there's like practicing technique, but then there's also songwriting, and there's like band practice. There's, I mean, and obviously all like the booking and social media and stuff like that. But like, when is it one or when is it the other? Or is it sort of amorphous and it just sort of changes based off of where you're at that moment or whatever, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, because you can never, fitting everything you're supposed to be doing is hard.
I think my anxiety will get me carried away. It's like I'll be practicing guitar and all of a sudden I feel like I need to set up like a YouTube page or something. You know what I mean? It's I can't just sit there and work on the thing that actually is required to like do that stuff or whatever, you know? Yeah. So
I would say we're very different in that way, in workflow style, except in workflow amount, we're very similar. Me and John.
Okay. Yeah.
Like John's definitely one of the hardest working people I know.
I'm assuming it's like the goal of like at least a 40-hour week of some kind, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm more of a holistic style of work where I'm spending time and I'm not always designating an amount to a certain thing. I kind of see what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And if you're in it all the time, like I never leave it essentially.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
And so, yeah, if you never leave the world that you create for yourself, then you're going to be probably fine if you're doing the right things, right? Yeah. So, yeah, like when I started on guitar, I would just go down in the basement and just mostly improvise for hours and just try to figure out my voice. And it wasn't even that. I was just really enjoying playing music. Mm-hmm. And then I'd learn a new like scale or a mode or something. And then I'd spend all week in that world. And then you can really feel the kind of atmosphere that you've created that week and understand it. And then you move on. Instead of trying to cram a bunch of stuff, you kind of like, you chip away at this larger thing your whole life, I think. And so like today I've been working on this film score. So I'll kind of sit down. I've got some goals, but the biggest progress I made on this project was just like not even looking at the movie and just kind of thinking about it and then writing something and completing it and then sending it. And they were like, oh, it's perfect.
It's exactly what we needed.
Where when I was like putting it to the picture, it was more unnatural, I guess. So it's a complicated thing where I'm going to let John talk about his thing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think if you can figure out how to practice something, then you can apply that skill to, you were like talking about the like wanting to make a YouTube channel or something. Not like,
right. It's just like my brain will just get carried away. Like,
cause you get distracted and feel like,
cause I'll look at like a lesson or something and I'll be like, oh, I'm behind or like, I should be doing what they're doing. Well, you know, like that sort of weird thing.
I mean, the whole, like, you have to solve your own problem.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Comparison is the thief of joy, as they say on the internet lately.
It sounds wise. I hope it's true.
And, maybe it would be cool to like have a YouTube channel and stuff. You have a podcast.
Right, that's cool.
I don't have any podcasts. But,
you'd have a good podcast, actually.
Do what?
You'd have a good one.
Yeah.
I do have a good podcast.
You would have a gun.
Yeah. You're like, I do have a gun.
I was just
see,
going
this
it.
Is how you materialize things. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just manifest.
Lie. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm a list person. I like make lists and stuff. But that is something I've been appreciating, especially being out of school. Like being in school, it was like you feel like you're. Have to be responsible for so many things at the same time, and you're kind of working on a lot of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you might have to put something down for a while and then come back to it months or years later, and it's like, oh, this like makes a lot of sense now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've been getting a lot. I don't know. I wish I was better at it because I tend to be all not all over the place, but trying to do like 10 things.
Yeah.
Whereas if you pick like one or two things, you can make a lot of progress really quickly. So it's really satisfying to me to be like, all right, I'm just going to, and even simple stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know? Do either of you work with Reason at all?
Reason?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, me and my wife, during COVID, we made like a little Reason EP.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I like it a lot. Really, I know a lot of people use Ableton. Do you use?
I have used Ableton. I am not. Ableton's great, but I'm not a big fan of it.
Okay.
And I could tell you why, but who cares?
Right on. Yeah. I can watch like a tutorial with people using it and understand what's going on, but like it's just hard to look at, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's so ugly. it's like use built-in Ableton effects. Like, why do they look like stupid little dots
and it's gray and it's just kind of sad.
Damn, guys.
So
we're here on the chopping block tonight. Yeah. Post-Animal and Ableton.
And the most popular DAW. Yeah. 18 years.
How will they survive this interview? So,
actually, I feel like I got started on, like, do you remember Rebirth?
No.
RB388. So it was like an early Propellerhead software thing.
Oh, okay.
And it was on Windows. And there wasn't really like, maybe some people had DAWs, but I fucking didn't. Like, you couldn't really buy one at Best Buy or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But Rebirth was just like a little program.
Uh-huh.
It had like that hardware look that Reason has, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
one of the things I like about it is that.
Kind of like virtual rack.
But it was just an 808. A 909 and two 303s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then like some effects. And you had like these pattern selectors. So you were just like programming in step sequences on those four instruments.
So it didn't even have the, just had sequencers. It didn't have like
no
the
mixer.
Arrangement.
Yeah. Well, the arrangement was like, you could save different patterns.
And then
you could like record a it's going to be section one and then go to section two and then three and then back to one or however you want it. People made some cool, there's some cool videos out there actually.
Yeah.
Of some amazing shit with just something so simple, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I was attracted to, when I found out about Reason, it was like Reason 2.5. I was like, oh, I remember.
Oh, cool.
Rebirth, that was cool.
Like, yeah.
What the fuck is this? This is crazy, but I couldn't do shit with it at the time.
Yeah.
I remember trying to write music in college with it. I was like, I'm confused.
That's like, it's kind of why I brought it up. I've been trying to like work in there more often lately and just kind of clock in and.
Reason, great.
And it's really fun, but it's this thing of like, you know, you can part right or you can sound design essentially.
Sure.
And it's sort of like this, it's a little bit of both, but it's sort of like you go in with the intention of like, oh, I'm going to write this like instrumental or this little beat. And then all of a sudden you're just like playing with like different pad swells and connecting things together. And it's sort of like, is this effective use of time or is it like, and I've heard advice of like, it's like, you might not always write a song that day, but sit down and design your like drum samples or design a synth tone or, like some risers or or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's good utilization of time, but it's sort of this like, I don't know. It's hard to feel like people wake up that day where it's like, yeah, I'm just going to like make a bunch of like stingers today. You know?
Right. I'm going to go in and like chop up like 180 kick samples.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've done shit like that, but I don't know. I think that relates to like what I was saying is like, if you have the practice thing, just getting in there and spending the time,
right?
Like writing, you can practice writing.
Yeah.
I think that's the important thing about it is just to like do it consistently, whether you feel like doing it or not.
Yeah. Right.
You that's know. The thing.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense.
That's essential, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but DAWs can be option hell. I mean, one thing I like to do is not work in DAWs. at all. But if I do, I'll be like, okay, today is a writing day, or today is like a writing and recording. I'm just going to set things up so I can create as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And tomorrow will be an editing day. I like to try to separate those processes.
That makes sense.
So that I don't get bogged down with what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're like, man, I had this idea and now I'm going in and like editing crossfades and like overthinking something. And a couple hours have gone by.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So that's interesting. There's a lot I want to talk about because, like, you know, I know you both have multiple projects, but then you work together and multiple projects as well. I'm assuming the songwriting process is different with each one, right? So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like, how did Super City, like, start? Actually, have you done a lot of podcasts? Or, like, I bet you you've told the origin story a couple times at least.
Yeah. Interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't mind talking about it. yeah, me and Greg went to Towson together.
Okay.
We were about to graduate. And we've known each other since high school.
Okay.
And played guitar together and kind of jammed loosely. And we were always in separate bands. And then we were like, let's do a band because we're both really good. And let's like write a song, try to write some pop songs or something. And our first limitation was like, all right, instead of using like a bunch of pedals like we love doing, we're going to try to achieve every effect between the two guitars. So the first EP we did was like really reliant on these patterns that went together as two guitars.
Okay. But like clean tone stuff?
Yeah, or? Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because it's like the poppiest stuff we ever did. So yeah, Find You was based on, it started with a technique with like Steve Reich or Philip Glass, like minimalist composers did. And then we turned it into like pop candy, I guess. But I don't know how they'd feel about that. Yeah. But
hopefully bad.
Yeah, so, hopefully bad.
So then how'd you two meet?
John and I met, I saw him in my friend's concert and he was playing piano, organ.
Piano on that one, I think.
Yeah, piano. And we got to talking. And then we would play together every week in the morning. Like you would.
On Fridays, yeah.
Yeah, John would come.
Oh, cool.
And we'd play duo and then yeah. And then we formed Jazz Lunch.
And yeah. Keys like, and guitar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Just
piano.
So this is simultaneously or like yeah. Super, yeah, okay.
But yeah, it started Super City basically as a recording project of Greg and I's, and we kind of quickly brought together a band. Mm-hmm. It was
I was recording you guys a little at first.
Yeah, we were recording on his, what was it, the tape?
It's thing? A Tascam 244 or 288. It's like the
okay,
the cassette 8 tracks. I still have 3 of them, and none of them work. So if you know anyone that can fix them.
Okay, yeah.
I know. I have one working.
I have like a cassette player that I don't know where to take it to like just get looked at because it would probably be way more than it's really
you
worth.
You can take it to Just Audio. They might keep it for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so John was recording us on that.
That's cool.
So if you'd listen to the EP, the really hip sounding tracks are the ones we did at John's. Yeah, and then we were like, well, he's playing piano on this record, so we should get him to play piano in the band, right?
Cool.
And then Brian played upright bass on it on one track, and then immediately we were like, hey, Brian, want to join up?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got Mike Gambone on drums, and he was with us for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
It all very quickly came together, and then that song, Find You, kind of like WTMD loved it, and then it coincided with this NPR, the World Cafe Live Baltimore feature, which was kind of insane. So it was played nationally, like the first song that we recorded. It's very, very lucky that it happened that way.
Right.
It seems like Nepo Baby kind of happenstance, you know, where it's like, oh, industry plants. But it was really just luck. It's like blind luck, you know.
That's and wild.
Yeah, it was kind of insane. Yeah, yeah. And then immediately we abandoned the like clean guitar thing because we were like, what if we rocked?
So is it still like you and Greg writing everything for the most part?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, but everyone's kind of contributing lyrics and stuff.
Cool.
And parts every once in a while. Yeah, it's still like very much like, because the modern writing style, I guess, is for a lot of people is you're writing your DAW.
Yeah.
And so
you basically make a demo.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the demos are like sound like 90% of the way there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Greg and I kind of operate that way. And then the thing that takes forever is lyrics because none of us are natural lyricists. That's
interesting.
That's my weakness that I grind on all the time where I'm like,
yeah, so
that's my defense with Michael Jordan, you know.
We'll contribute lyrics. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and some recording parts, but usually the parts are there and I'll record different synth sounds.
That was another question was if...
Or vocals.
I guess so music tends to come first then. It's not like, let's write a song about this and then you kind of work that way. It's more kind of ideas and then sort of figure out what those sounds maybe make you think of lyrically after the fact.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, lately I've been trying to write more abstractly with lyrics and try to find a feeling more than a subject, because that's usually my favorite poetry goes that way and my favorite lyrics go that way is when it's a little more ambiguous and doesn't give you everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to leave room for the listener to put themselves in.
Yeah, add context to
it. It's kind of the opposite of I think I've seen the other thing, maybe what you're describing is somebody who has a bad day and they pick up the acoustic guitar and then everything, they play one thing.
Sure.
That's the whole song. And then everything they write down in the moment becomes a lyric and there's no editing.
Yeah.
Kind of a singer-songwriter thing.
Well, currently it's February. Are you familiar with February?
What?
Album writing month? Oh. Have you heard of that before?
No.
There's a website. I think it's FAWM, FAWM.org or whatever. But the goal is that you write 14 songs in 28 days.
Cool.
Yeah. And there's a forum and you can post your stuff and people then will do a little community sharing and commenting thing about it. Yeah. But the goal of writing a song every 2 days, essentially, great challenge, but at the same time is do you just I've definitely written songs where it's this is a thing I'm thinking about, or this is what I want to write about, and then just move that direction.
Pre-music.
You know, and just it might go something like this, or pick a genre almost and just be this will be this song's about this, and it'll kind of be in the style of X or whatever. So
that's cool. I'm doing this. It sounds kind of similar. I'm doing this weekly beats thing.
Okay.
You finish a track every week. For a year.
Yeah.
And they do even numbered years.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's good for is you have to get to that point where you're sometimes you're this song's great and everything's going great, but sometimes you're man, this song sucks and I have 3 hours before the deadline and I need to fix it, so what would I have to do that? And you just do it. So it's really useful.
Cool. But
that's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of just the practicing songwriting, whether you feel like it or not.
Right, yeah.
It's a skill.
Sure.
Know? Yeah, for me, I don't know. I've tried to do a lot of collaborative writing in the past, and I think it's really an illusion, you know? You can't actually both write at the same time. It's kind of one person is enabling the other, one person is kind of being a sound engineer or setting things up and the other person is being creative, or you're just taking turns.
Okay.
So I think it's actually a lot more efficient to do the demo thing.
Sure. Know?
It's easier for people to learn. We all have this kind of middle school fantasy to me and my four best friends are gonna jam and that's we'll write songs together. It's really, really hard to do that. And unless it's really simple stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I sort of write lyrics and music kind of separately. I tend to write lyrics just on my phone, in the moment whenever I'm experiencing something or feeling a thought passes your mind. They just kind of pop into my head.
Yeah.
And then I'll go through, I have dozens of them, and then I'll go through my music and just look and see would that work? And for me, when I write lyrics, there's always some kind of rhythmic content that kind of suggests melodies already.
Okay.
So if I look at it and I'm listening to a demo, I can kind of tell this kind of fits, or the melody I had in mind fits or doesn't fit, or this is how it could work.
You know? Okay.
And then it's a little massaging.
Ben works that with lyrics first and then music second. He's very much a lyrics first writer.
Yeah.
Ben from Bodega.
But, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So he, and then, I do the same thing with, I'll try to write little poems or something. And my latest hack, which everyone I'm close to has heard me say a million times, but has been, I'll take a piece of literature that I really like and then type it out over and over and over again, right?
Okay.
Because I heard that, I saw this Hunter S. Thompson interview or documentary where he talked about how he would take Hemingway, he'd take a full novel and he'd spend the day typing it, you know, and then at the end of the novel, he'd just keep going.
Oh, weird. Yeah.
Because he got the rhythm of it.
Absorbed the cadence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kinda, I get you.
and that's a great person to get a cadence from, right?
Yeah.
And, but the thing is, like, a cadence is only a skeleton, because you're going to fill in your own personality on top of that cadence,
sure.
right? So it might feel similar rhythmically to Hemingway, but it's... Yeah.
Plus, it's your interpretation of that, so it's already coming through, like,
yeah, you'll
a
never,
filter. Yeah.
You'll never have the same perspective as someone else. So, like, actually, yeah, that's been a thing with production, too. If I'm, like, I want to set out to make something, sometimes I'll listen to something I really like for like a second and then try to build it without ever listening to it again.
Right.
And then you try to recreate it and you'll immediately start to get ideas that vary from the original thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably not going to get that close to the original too, because it's
right.
15 minutes have passed and you don't know what the bass is doing rhythmically, you know? So you're going to end up in a different spot and usually somewhere kind of cool or not, but that's fine too.
I was going to ask you about Soul Cannon, because it's a project that I don't really know much about at all, to be honest. I don't even know if I've seen you play.
Oh,
yeah. Man. I feel like I've missed it every time. You know?
So. Well, we play rarely these days because...
Yeah.
Matt, our guitar player, has moved to Connecticut. At the
oh, really? But okay.
That's actually one project where we did a lot of collaborative writing.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be like, I would come in with an idea and then we would try to play it. And then Matt would come up with another section, you know, or he would come in with something. And a lot of it would be sheet music.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting.
At that time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He would write something out in Sibelius, and then we would be fucking trying to sight read it, you know, and like playing it, seeing how it would work. And then I would write a section.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Adding a section, or we would come up with a section together. But it was always sort of something to go off of.
Okay.
You know.
And then is Easy always part of the band?
Yeah, Easy was a founding member. Yeah. I was brought on pretty early on.
Yeah.
And we brought on Matt shortly after that.
Yeah.
We used to have a bass player, Councilman Ryan Dorsey.
Okay, cool.
He's now on the city council.
Yeah. Shout out.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we became a four-piece. I was doing a lot of left-hand bass, playing a lot of organ.
Okay.
Like jazz organ, and I was playing... My other gig was like a singer. It was just me accompanying a singer on piano, and I was playing a lot of left-hand bass and those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned all the bass parts. And then we started writing new stuff. So that's kind of a fun... That's still like... That's like the only time I have fun playing piano or keys these days. It's like, it's such a good group of people. It's like, whee!
Sorry, that's funny, because it's like you play keys in their projects.
Yeah, our parts are not hard. But our parts are...
I forgot about that.
I'm sorry I insulted you.
I don't know. I know. I know what you're going through. Guitar's more fun in Super City.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, and then now Adjective Animal, which was a solo project.
Yeah.
It was a full band, which is...
I was doing it solo. And you were running sound for me a lot, which that was fun too. I want to get back to that a little bit, but yeah.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah. I remember you did a show with a band called... They were Adjective Animal. They were something like bird, and they were like, I think they're making fun of us. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it happens a lot. I played with this band Fozzie Mare recently. I was like, oh man, there is another one. But that, you know, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Sure, yeah.
But really what I wanted to convey with that is like not necessarily making fun of bands with that, but just it tended to be that format of like guitar, bass and drums and kind of indie music.
Oh, sure, you know? Sure, like, yeah.
Minus we're one the of bear. These, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many of them. You know? Now there's all these like moon bands and like mommy bands. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how like band names go through these trends.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I wonder what the next era will be. I really couldn't stand the, well, no, I could stand it, but because there were some good bands, but the like twist on a celebrity's name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Bands,
yeah.
You know? And it's like, I hate that I love this song.
I remember a band came through Joe's. They were just called the Miami Dolphins.
That's sick. Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Which is also an adjective animal.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of. Yeah, it's more location animal.
Yeah. It's a noun animal.
Right.
Can I tell about the Buffalo Bills thing?
Sure. What? I don't know what you're talking about.
I was talking about the Buffalo Bills.
Oh.
And John was like, where are they from? And I was like, wait, you thought they were like the Cincinnati Buffalo Bills? Like that was their...
I just thought like Buffalo Bill was like a thing.
Yeah, oh, it makes sense, but that's a goofy ass name, you know?
Yeah. Well, it comes from.
I guess
like,
so is the Bills.
I listened to a lot of Beatles. That was like some of the first music I learned on piano. Was Beatles, and I loved when I was like eight. I loved all the Animal songs. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was like in my head. It was like, hey, Buffalo Bill. You know, it wasn't Bungalow Bill, and Buffalo Bill was just like a cowboy that rode buffaloes or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's fine person.
That's cool. Sorry I put you on blast like that.
No, it's cool.
Yeah. Someone else needed to go on the
Check
shopping
out
block.
This guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Ableton, host animal.
John.
Get him.
Yeah. Incidentally, post animal is the one case where it does matter what it looks like on stage. Whether the guy is there or not.
You know. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, it mostly matters. I mean, if you're on, I mean, sorry to, I think it really matters what it looks like on stage. I mean, depending on the philosophy of what you think performing is, but you are there, right? You are there in front of people.
Yeah.
So like anything that is visual is a factor no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be.
By default, yeah.
And there's really no rules to it too. Mm-hmm. Like there's accepted formats, but really like the band wouldn't even have to be up there. It could be like, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely been explored, but it is inevitably a factor whether you acknowledge it or not. But it depends how much it matters to the band, you know? Oh, well.
Yeah. You said, oh, well. Why did you look at me when you said, oh, well?
Huh?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, well, to some people, looks really don't matter.
Like I said, I have a face for radio.
Hold on.
Oh, the sound, yeah. Wait, I got one. Wait, hold on. Should we... What is this? It's kind of Stranger Things-y.
Nice, yeah.
You mean post-animal?
Reminds me of Space Ghost a little bit.
How sick would it be if the Stranger Things band, post-animal, played like Stranger Things style music?
They'd probably go farther.
Yeah, you're so right. Yeah.
They'd get out of Chicago, that's for sure.
Yeah. Because
Oh, like, all those fans.
Ooh, if they were like post-animal collective.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
You already got an arpeggiator in there. Yeah. You know, you just got to speed it up.
Yeah. Speaking of local bands, should we shout out some local projects we're excited about? Lefty Bay is coming out with an album March 22nd.
Ooh, can't I don't know Lefty that. Bay.
Lefty
Bay is
great. Austin is the leader of Lefty Bay. Also plays guitar in Sleepy Sword.
It's okay. Like the
I've
heard of that.
Members of both bands.
Okay.
Yeah, Sleepy Sword's cool.
Yeah.
Lefty Bay's coming out with an album. I wonder if we'll see more from Hex Girlfriends now that Walker is back in town.
Yeah, I hope so.
What do you got?
I love that.
Manners is good. We know that they were in the studio.
Manners is a band and good.
Methinks they might be continuing to be a band.
That's great. They played the big finale at Joe Squared, mm-hmm. and it was nice to see them because I had not seen them in a while. So
that's an incredible band.
Yeah.
That they've got that that thing you can only get from spending a lot of time together. You know, that real rock and roll shit.
Chemistry.
Yeah, that's what that's called. Yeah, they've got the 99 chemistry
it factor. Yeah.
No, it's pretty amazing. It's
just endless charisma.
They're for real. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
A swagger. They've got a swagger.
Swagger,
now.
Yeah.
They've had a swagger for a few years, actually.
Yeah.
It's a well-refined swagger.
You never know what form it's going to take with the band, too. Like, when they find that. It's different for every band.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't think there's any, like, cookie-cutter swagger. It's either real or it's not.
Right. You can tell when it's not.
Yeah. You can smell it. You know, I mean, I guess we've spent a lot of time watching bands, but but you can tell when that confidence is real, you know?
Yeah. And,
but also like, it's hard to tell where it's going to come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
I think about that with Manners. They're just so great. Their swagger is unparalleled.
Yeah, I feel like, so this was actually cool because like
are you surprised by that?
No. I think I get, sometimes I'm like, when it comes to people I don't know as well, I'm like, will we keep the balloon in the air for the full hour, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we actually didn't even get to like all my questions before hitting the goal, right?
Wow.
You know?
You got any more?
Which is good, sort of.
I mean, I don't know what you're trying to do, but.
I guess the question, like, time management is always something that comes up, and like, you're both in a million projects, so I'm sure that's challenging, right? And you're in projects that are like in multiple states as well. So, you know, I guess.
Yeah, time management is hard.
Yeah. With stuff like that, with like Bodega, for example, is it really just, is it a lot of file sharing? Is that how you guys work? Or is it
I mean, it's easier now. You know, I can't imagine doing what I'm doing in like the 70s.
Right.
I'd probably just be like,
move somewhere.
But yeah, it's a lot of that. And I don't really have to rehearse in a lot of projects so much. I'll do a rehearsal before the tour.
Yeah, I was going to say you probably meet up and at least rehearse once or twice. But
I'm usually one of the more reliable musicians of I'll learn the songs really, really well and contribute more to them than was there, and then I'm trusted for that, and so I don't have to spend as much time.
Did you meet, like, do those bands reach out to you, or did you meet them at like other shows and it's like that same kind of thing where it just sort of evolves from hanging out?
Yeah, I actually met I met the old bass player Bodega at a Super City show in New York.
Cool.
And she, she was sending me songs like just like on Spotify stuff she was checking out, and I was like, that's really cool. I haven't heard of any of this. And then their guitar player quit for a couple tours. And so they asked for a video of me playing one of the songs from one of their sets.
Yeah.
And then I sent the whole set. Because you have to do, if you're trying to do something and trying to impress people, you should go overboard.
Sure. Yeah.
So I did the whole set and learned it really well. I did that at John's house, actually.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
I remember that.
And so it was me against someone that barely learned one of the songs. And so that was an easy sell.
Yeah.
But I definitely went overboard. But but yeah, the audition was really, like, I finally played with them and it was like there was some sparks happening. It was really cool.
Nice.
And that's an incredible band before I was in it. Actually, one of my favorite bands before I was in it too. And yeah, so I finally got myself a planner, and so I just write everything out, and it's like much easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I met them that way. And then the Lunar Year, who's based in Philly, I've known Adam Shumsky, the drummer, forever. He's like in a bunch of projects, and we went on tour a couple times together with Super City with his old band, Vita and the Wolf.
Okay.
He like hit me up for this like in studio session in Philly, and I listened to the songs on the way there, and then that was our first time playing together, was this recorded thing that you can check out on YouTube. And I don't know. It's just over-prepare all the time. That's you got to do it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Punctuality.
Yeah.
It really helps if like everybody in a project knows, you know, you don't have to be early, but if you can like start things on time, it helps a lot with everybody's time management.
Sure. Yeah.
That scene in The Irishman. Have you seen The Irishman?
I saw it once. I was not like the biggest fan, but
the scene I most relate to and I think of all the time is when the guy's 15 minutes late to the meeting.
Okay.
And Al Pacino is like, no, 10 minutes traffic. That's fine. 15 minutes, you're saying something. You're saying fuck you. They have this whole fight about like the ethics of like being 15 minutes late, and they're like, you know,
yeah,
it's very like East versus West Coast style like conversation. But
so fun.
I love that. And it ends with him being like, that's why you gotta it's because you were fucking 15 minutes late, you know. Some shit like that. But I don't know. 15 minutes is the limit.
Yeah,
you know?
This is all very informative because I'm in a band. Let me tell you, no, maybe later. But yeah, Dan, John, I don't know. Do you have anything to plug? This will probably come out in a couple weeks. Other than that, this was awesome.
Super City's on tour.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're touring all over the states a couple times through March and April. I know tomorrow, which is Wednesday, the 21st, Bodega will have a new track out.
Which one?
City Is Taken.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard that one.
You were showing me the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Nicki song. It's actually the first track I recorded on, but for them. And then, I don't know, what else is going on? Lots of stuff.
I think Adjective Animal's playing March 13th with an interesting band that Super City played with called Orange Doors.
Cool.
They're really fun. That's going to be at the Crown.
Nice.
That's awesome. They're
playing at Holy for Holies in April sometime.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
I definitely have something else. Do you have any Philly listeners?
Sure. Yeah.
We are growing our Philly market.
Yeah, yeah. This might give me that Philly bump, you know?
Yeah, what is going on? We're playing in Philly. The Lunar Year is playing Sweet Juice Fest.
Oh, cool.
In May. Oh, that's kind of a while from now.
That's okay.
May 15th, but...
Rad.
That'll be really cool. Yeah, we'll just list all of our gigs, I guess. Yeah. I'm playing a wedding on...
Hell yeah. Sweet. I think that's it.
Awesome.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it.